more likely that Heydrich came to him one day and said, the Führer, Adolf Hitler, has ordered, he wants the Jews all out of Europe. And from that had then developed the more radical version. Clearly, such an order existed, you would expect to find it on paper. You would expect the British to have decoded it somewhere. You would expect somebody to have written a letter home to their mother saying, dear mummy, I have today had to transmit the most terrible order to the SS Gruppenführers on the Eastern Front. This kind of thing. And after 60 years, we're entitled to expect such an order to come. As you probably know, ever since my book on Adolf Hitler, Hitler's War, was published in 1977, for 42 years, now 32 years now, I've offered £1,000 reward for anybody who can find one wartime document showing that Adolf Hitler even knew about Auschwitz, let alone gave orders for the killing of the Jews. The only documents you gradually find run the other way. We find that on the day that Auschwitz was overrun by the Russian army, the Red Army, in January 1945, the chief of the German General Staff, General Guderian, comes to Hitler and says at the war conference, which is written down by shorthand writers, yesterday the Red Army overran Auschwitz, mein Führer. And Hitler, a few seconds later, saying, well, what does he say? Does he say, oh my God, I hope we manage to destroy everything before the Russians find it, so they've got no trace of what we've been up to? No, he just says, okay, jawohl. Means nothing to him. It's the same if you look at all the documents, if you follow the methods that I use when I wrote my Hitler biography. I picked only genuine documents, ones that I was pretty satisfied that were genuine. At that time we didn't have any of the decodes, of course. I picked documents that had been on Hitler's desk, documents of which he was aware. I had a pretty strict criterion I applied, and you get a very different picture then.
He is the most publicized author on historical topics in the English language in the world. The moment when he came out and said that he now believed that the Holocaust was a hoax.
And now, towards the end of my writing life, I find that I'm having to re-examine one of those other towns, Auschwitz. And it's a very, very painful process, because halfway through my writing career, I wrote a book about Hitler, a biography of Hitler, in which I was still a believer. And now I've turned into an unbeliever. And here I am holding up the documents proving that the Hitler diaries are a fake, and a few seconds after that flashlight photograph was taken, I was hinauskomplimentiert. I was escorted out of the room about this size, in front of the eyes of the world's television cameras, right into the arms of ABC and Good Morning America, so that about 2.5 minutes later I was broadcasting live to the entire United States and completely wrecking Der Stern's chances of ever selling Hitler diaries over there. It's one of the high points in one's life. And I must admit that at that time, my conviction that $6 million worth of diaries were fakes was less securely founded than my conviction that I have grown to accept over the last 6 months or so, that the other 6 million fake is also unsecurely founded. I am now more sure than ever that there's something stinks about that episode than I was at the time I held up these documents on the Hitler diaries. I was quite prepared a few days later to believe that perhaps the Hitler diaries were genuine. But no one will ever convince me now that what we are told happened in Auschwitz and Treblinka and Majdanek did actually happen.
That it was Allied propaganda rehashed over and over again, and unearthed some documents and quoted them widely, that the British psychological warfare decision deliberately in the early 40s launched this campaign to deflect away from Soviet war crimes.
By doing the work in the British archives that the other historians have not done, Paul Norris has turned up the evidence that our own psychological warfare executive were behind the entire gas chamber story. And once again, we're quoting from the archives. They're in the British archives, how the psychological warfare executive decides quite cold-bloodedly and cynically to start putting out over the radio waves the allegation that the Germans have built special gas chambers for gassing the Jews and getting rid of them. And later on in the files, around about 1944, you find the chairman of the Joint Intelligence Committee, who is responsible for the psychological warfare executive, writing a handwritten minute. His name is Victor Cavendish Bentinck, an eminent banker, an industrialist, still alive in England now, Lord Portland as he is now, chairman of the Joint Intelligence Committee, writing in handwriting in 1944, words to the following effect. We've had a good run for our money with this gas chamber lie.
Uh-oh!
But really, we've got to be a bit careful because eventually it's going to be exposed and then our entire psychological warfare effort will be brought down with it. So isn't it a good time now to distance ourselves from this particular story? We've set the hair running, now we ought to let it go off by itself. A good run for their money in 1944, and here we are in 1988, and that hair is still running 44 years later.